Sometimes being a repo man can be a depressing business, especially if you're taking minivans with a child seat in the back away from middle-income Americans. Nobody wants to do that. My next guest today did that for a while and then decided it wasn't for him. So he decided to go into the repo business by repossessing the stuff from the rich and sometimes famous. We're talking private jets, yachts, and luxury cars here. His name is Ken Gage, and he's a celebrity repo man from Discovery Channel's long-running show, Airplane Repo. Hey, Ken, welcome to the show.
Hey, Steve. Thank you so much for having me.
So your business seems exciting and a little dangerous, especially when you watch the show. How would you describe it?
Well, it can be exciting and it can be dangerous, so that's usually how everything is perceived. But there's a lot of times where it's just really boring, a lot of surveillance and things like that. Mm. But honestly, at the end of the day, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it a lot.
How did you end up in the business and when did it start?
So back in 2004, three or four, I was working for Daimler Chrysler. I was doing collections on auto loans, high risk ones that were 45 days and longer past due. And I just realized that working in a huge corporation was no longer for me. So I called up one of my best friends, Bob Weeks, and he happened to be kind of in the same place. So we decided to start looking for some businesses, looked around for a little bit, found this high-end repo company, and we both immediately decided this was for us. But then I told my wife, and she said, no, absolutely not. I had four kids that were as young as 2 years old, so she said, you'll get killed, not happening. Mm-hmm. But strangely enough, as luck would have it, we were sitting there late at night, one July night, and we happened to see a repossession of an airplane on television. And it was 3 minutes, and it was quick, and it was easy, and it was safe, and we had no idea how much editing took place and all that. Right. So she sees that, she looks at me, she goes, that looked easy. Yeah, why don't you do it then? So we had no idea what we were really getting into, but we got permission at that point, and off we went.
Yeah, you know, I had a similar experience when I decided to start my own business and break away from the brokerage world and start my little shop. My wife said, no. She said, I don't want you to do this, too much risk. And I said, you know, I'm going to do it anyway because this is the right thing for me and I feel pretty secure about doing it. So, you know, sometimes you just got to, you know, when you know, you got to know and you got to follow your path, I guess, right?
Absolutely. And I talk to high school and middle school kids all the time about doing just that. I mean, like you said, when you know and it's in your heart and, and it's a passion, then you have to go for it. So you're proof that it works out and I think we're doing okay.
So you started the business in 2005, and then right after that, you know, there was the 2008 steep financial decline where a lot of, you know, real estate developers and lots of other people got into financial trouble. So did your business really blossom then?
It really did. And honestly, it happened a little before that. I have always said we're kind of like the canaries in the coal mine in that we kind of see the indicators in a grassroots level before it's reported and before it's talked about on a wider scale. So in the first year and a half or a little bit more of that with our time in the business, we were getting about 100 repos in a year. Average repo value was probably $40,000 or $50,000. Mm-hmm. And then something happened probably third quarter 2007 where we started seeing assets that were worth $200,000, $250,000, and going on up.
Yeah.
And so we saw a change in value before we saw a huge change in volume.
I see.
And we started, you know, we didn't know that this huge thing was coming, but we did notice like, wow, the values are better. We were thrilled because we sell these assets and get a commission.
Right.
But in 08, really through the end of 2011, we were averaging about 300 repos a year, up from 100.
Wow. And in this luxury market where you're talking about assets that are, you know, $500,000, $500,000, you know, what, $400,000 and the like, right? So it's a pretty good business when times are good.
Yeah, I mean, it was a time where the volume was great. The values were super high on the assets we were taking. I mean, we took probably $30 million plus assets every year.
Right.
On the downside, there's not as many buyers in a down market.
Yeah,
I mean, we did great.
We'll get into that in a minute. So what are the people like that the target, that, you know, the so-called target that make up the clientele from whom you're taking these items?
Generally speaking, I mean, in that down cycle, somewhere in the neighborhood of 65 to 70% of the debtors were somehow involved in real estate, whether it was development, whether it was pool companies, you know, paint companies, whatever it was, they were involved in real estate. So it was a huge, and everybody knows this now, but it's a huge real estate crash, and it affected everybody. Most of the people we deal with are, you know, in their 40s and 50s, sometimes a little older, sometimes a little younger, but generally in that range. And what we see is there are people that when the times are really good, 03, 04, 05, they lent or they borrowed money, and the banks would lend money right up to their limits.
Yeah.
So you could kind of see off the initial paperwork that one little bump, and they're not going to be able to make the payments. But the banks were super aggressive and super competitive in 03 through 05 in doing these loans. So a lot of them you could kind of see like, not the best idea. And obviously with that big crash, they all came back.
Yeah, so it not only happened in these kinds of luxury items, but also in the mortgage markets and people buying houses they couldn't afford and they shouldn't have bought. So it was all part of that psychology back then. What are you seeing now with regards to the kind of people that you're taking items away from today?
Well, it's more varied, which is probably a good thing. It means not one sector is getting hit really, really hard. So that's a good thing. The geography is varied. Right now, you know, in the last month or so, everywhere from Florida to New York to Chicago to, you know, the West Coast. So that's good. I mean, when it was bad, we went to California for a week every single month to pick up 10, 12 items.
Yeah.
We were in Nevada all the time and in Florida. This is a more varied geography.
Mm-hmm.
It's a better mix of boats and airplanes, where in the crash, we were getting so many airplanes.
I see.
It's more balanced, which is good. The values, though, are still, they're still kind of high.
What's volume like?
The volume's lower.
Lower.
It's definitely lower.
Okay, so you hold on. You guys are the canary in the coal mine, right?
Yes,
I'm an investment advisor. We would call that in our business that you're a leading indicator.
Correct.
Of things to come. So can you tell me what you think, where we stand in that? Or are you starting to see some kind of cracks in the masonry here? Or is it just kind of pretty, you know, kind of typical pattern?
So here's the biggest difference that makes it more difficult to be definitive on what you're asking is the fact that prior to 2008, like I said, the banks were super aggressive on lending. The last several years, or you know, let's look at 2012 through 2014 or 15, banks were very conservative in lending. So it would make sense, regardless of the economy, that there would be fewer repos to get because they were so conservative.
Yeah.
The last few years.
Right.
Where in 08, they were so aggressive.
Okay.
It made sense. But it seems like with the volume being as low as it is, and with there being no discernible difference as far as geography, as far as sectors, as far as that, it seems like it's just the normal course of business. You're always going to have some repos.
Yep.
So I don't think there's anything alarming at this point. It just seems like it's pretty much just rolling along right now.
I've been talking with Ken Cage, the repo man from Discovery Channel's show Airplane Repo. He's the guy who will come and get your private jet, your yacht, or your luxury car should you be just a little late on the loan. Hey, so what is the bank's point of view here, real quick? I mean, when is a loan overdue? When do they feel like they're at most risk? And when do they bring you in?
So generally speaking, I mean, they consider it overdue one day past due. They start collecting, generally speaking, at 14 days past due, and that could be through robocalls. They get nervous at 30 days past due.
Define nervous.
Because at that point, they've tried for 2 weeks to contact people to get the payments brought in. Because a lot of times people just forget. They could be on vacation, any number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One phone call generally spurs on most people to make the payments.
Yeah.
So once they get to 30, then they're thinking, we've been trying for 15, 16 days. No response. Now they start to escalate things as far as, you know, they call twice a day, their physical calls as opposed to robocalls. So now they're digging in. And that's what we used to do. They always told us at 46 days past due, that's a magic number. If it gets to 46, the likelihood of a repo goes up dramatically.
Yeah, they have the stats that show where that kind of critical point is.
And they always said 46 was it.
Mm-hmm.
So from 30 to 45, you know, the collection teams are really working. They're trying to find relatives. They're trying to find associates. Trying to find business and all that kind of stuff.
Now, at 6 months, is the bank required to charge that loan off and to take it as a complete loss?
It's 120 days is the charge-off number.
Okay, 120 days. Okay.
Yeah.
And a bank doesn't want to do that.
No. So that's why, in most cases, they call us somewhere around 60, 65 days past due.
Okay.
So that gives us plenty of time to go, make contact, repo the asset if need be, even sell the asset before the charge-off point. But that was a huge difference as well, really, in 09, 10, and 11, is they would wait till 80, 85 days past due, which put a lot of pressure on us. So. But normally it's 60 to 65 days past due. They'll call us.
What happens when they charge it off? Why is that something they want to avoid at all costs?
Because that's a loss that they have to report. And then if we do sell the asset after that, it's just, it's an accounting thing that drives them nuts. They hate the charge-offs.
Okay.
Because it's a loss for them. And a repo is a loss too. But if they can get the asset repossessed and we, as the licensed broker that sells these assets, can get the cash back to them, they don't have to go through the charge-off process.
Right.
So the loss, actual loss isn't as great.
So paying your expenses, paying your commissions, paying for the costs of obtaining these assets, I want to go into that right now. So it's one thing if you were to go and pick up the minivan that I spoke about at the top of the show, but if you're picking up a Gulfstream or a luxury yacht, I mean, it can be pretty expensive to get it back home.
Absolutely. I mean, the fuel to fly, you know, we picked up a Gulfstream 3 down in Fort Lauderdale a little bit ago, and the fuel cost alone is a five-figure cost just to go from Fort Lauderdale to Orlando. By the time you get the pilots in there and the fuel and everything else, because you can't run it empty, so you have to put in you know, a significant amount of fuel. The pilots cost you money. You need two of them. So moving these things is expensive. The cost to store these assets is thousands a month for the bigger assets.
Mm-hmm.
A Cessna 172, you know, that's obviously a lot less. But yeah, the bigger assets, it's very, very expensive. And then we're brokers, so we charge a commission, which gets taken out of the sale. So the costs add up really, really quickly for the banks. And in most cases, they can't sell it for as much as what the amount is owed anyway.
That's what I was going to say, and I want to get into that in a second too. But so if we're talking about 100 cents on the dollar, so you know, whatever the amount, the value of the asset was new, and kind of, you know, just vaguely coming up with a percentage of what they would expect to receive back after all of the costs of moving the vehicle, of storing the vehicle, of paying the commission, of getting money from the sale and all that. What are we talking, 50 cents on the dollar or more or less?
Probably by the time you net everything out after all the expenses, it's probably somewhere in the 50 to 60 cent range.
Which I guess they're happy with, right?
The banks are happy with it, but at the end, yeah, they have to go after the debtor for,
and then they go for the
deficiency balance.
Yeah, so that's expensive too.
It is, and it's tough. They don't want to do that.
Yeah, it was like during the mortgage crisis or during the home crisis where everything was foreclosed. I mean, the banks really aren't in the business of being residential property owners. You know, they're kind of bad at it, actually.
They're terrible, and they'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Their business is, you know, and their commodity is cash.
Yeah.
They're great with cash. That's what they want to work with, and that's it.
All right. So, you know, I'm a value investor, and this perked my ears up when I was reading about it and reading about you. So, you know, you've got this asset that was worth, let's just say it's a 50-foot yacht. And I don't know what they go for. Let's say they go for $600,000. Now you're telling me that kind of the value is $300,000, let's just say. I mean, that boat is sitting in your marina, and you're a broker, and now you're willing to sell it. Is this a good place for me to go to find great values?
It can be, yes. Absolutely. Now, with the economy being stronger right now, I've been posting a lot of sales on my LinkedIn page, and we're actually getting more than the banks are asking for consistently, and we're getting it in 30 days.
Okay.
So, you know, there's value there for sure, no doubt about it. But I would say the values aren't as great as they were 3 years ago because there are more people with cash.
Yeah.
So obviously there's more out there buying.
Yeah, well, cash is king. So in bad markets, if you have cash, I mean, you're really, you're dictating terms. And you know, as I said, cash is king. The other thing that occurred to me when you were talking about, you know, the banks robocalling them and then a person calling them is that you can't say the check is in the mail anymore.
No.
Because they'll say, well, give me your account number and we will ACH the funds right now. Can't get away with that anymore.
You're absolutely right. And honestly, that's one thing, too, that people have to understand. You know, if you're behind, if you make a promise to pay, you better pay, because that's something that the collectors also consider when they're making decisions on next steps.
Yeah.
If you have a broken promise, it's the trust level, for obvious reasons, drops a little bit. If you say you're paying on Tuesday,
of course.
On Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, also, I would think that those people are professionals. The banks are professionals. They do this. You're a professional. You do this every day, all the time. And I'm a guy who decided to buy a plane I can't afford.
Right.
So you're really kind of, if you're at the poker table and you're wondering who the patsy is, you're the patsy. That old saying, you know.
That is fair to say.
Okay. My guest is Ken Cage, celebrity repo man from Discovery Channel's long-running show, Airplane Repo. I want to get into a little bit about what it's like to do that show, Ken. I mean, we as watchers of reality TV think it's reality, but you're there on the set. You're being told, you know, to shorten your lines or lengthen your lines. You know what's going on a day to day. You know what they're shooting. And then when it's all wrapped up, you'll go and watch an episode. And I want to know how far apart the actual reality is from the reality show.
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. Obviously, sometimes we're myself, the owner of the company, and the production company that's putting the show together are opposing forces because, you know, I have to protect my company and I have to keep things as real as we humanly can. And they want to tell a story.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, there's a lot of times because of the legalities involved that we have to reproduce things. I can't show me talking to you as the debtor and repoing your airplane.
A real person.
That's against the
law. Yeah, of course.
So we have to reproduce some of that stuff, and we put the disclaimers right on at the beginning.
These are actors, and this is a...
Some of the stuff is reproduced or redone and recreated and stuff like that, which is... So we try and tell people that up front.
Mm-hmm.
I push really hard to keep the stories as true as humanly possible, and that's always been my fight. We had a second production team that did the third season, and they were really great to work with because they were able to tell a great story, but also honor the fact that I owned a company and they didn't want to hurt that. So didn't have to fight as hard on that. But yeah, there's a lot of times. And honestly, if you look at some of the news pieces I did before the show, I'm very quiet when I'm actually repossessing because I'm scanning and I'm looking and I'm listening and I'm figuring. Then I started doing my regular thing with the reality shows. Like, you can't sit quietly.
Oh, no.
What are you thinking? What are you going through? And that was really a challenge at first.
Mm-hmm.
And my tagline that I've become kind of known for, when I find the airplane or the yacht I'm looking for, I always say, Yahtzee.
Yahtzee?
People are like, is that your thing? I mean, you've always said Yahtzee. I'm like, no, I'm sitting there looking at a plane with cameras on me. I'm like, all right, let's go. And they're like, no, you have to celebrate.
Got it.
How am I going to celebrate? And they made me sit there and come up with Yahtzee.
Well, you also go around with a bodyguard as well. So take us out. We've got about a minute left. Tell us one of your most interesting stories.
Well, when I first met Danny, who Danny Thompson is my partner on the show, and he does repos with me off the show as well. I first met him outside of Phoenix, Arizona on a case. Production crew put us together. I thought I was actually hiring him, but the production crew is like, no, he's for the show. He gets in the car. He's nervous as can be because we don't know each other. And and we're trying to drive to this repo by the airport. All of a sudden, he blows through a stop sign and there's a police officer there. So literally 15 minutes after I meet him, he's getting pulled over. I look at him, I'm like, do I have anything to worry about here with the police? Because I didn't know anything.
Right.
He looks at me and goes, not that you need to know about. And now the officer's here. I'm like, what kind of answer is that? So I'm freaking out. He obviously was clean as a whistle, never an infraction in his life. The officer leaves, he looks over and he goes, you need to relax a little, and then laughs at me. So, you know, he's a great character, but he's also a great protector because I can't physically get involved with people. I can't breach the peace. But as a bodyguard, he can help me keep the debtors away from me and away from the assets, which makes my life a whole lot easier.
So is he a pretty big guy?
Danny is about 5'10", 5'11". He's huge. I think he goes 250, but he's also the North Carolina state record holder for powerlifting.
Gotcha.
So he is a huge guy.
So his presence mitigates a lot of the possible issues that you'll come across.
He absolutely does. Most people don't want to challenge him too much, but if they start trying to get tough and loud, he basically is my offensive lineman, and he keeps everybody away, and he just says go, and I get in the airplane and get with the pilots, and we're clear. So he keeps everything safe for me. Even if people want to challenge him, it doesn't last too long because Danny knows how to handle himself.
You've been listening to the Celebrity Repo Man from Discovery Channel's show Airplane Repo. I've been talking with Ken Cage. And don't forget that if you have a question about what we just discussed, ask us, call us, or write us, or go to our website at stevepomerantz.com and ask us anything you like. And when you're there, sign up for our weekly update where we will send you in your inbox the weekly show with all the segments separated and segregated, and you can read a summary or read the transcript or actually hear the segment itself. That's stevepomerantz.com. Hey, Ken, thank you so much for joining us.
Steve, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.